Hello and welcome to The Glories of Stories, a podcast where Father Greg Carlson, SJ, reveals the exciting stories and rare insights about the glorious books and artifacts in the Carlson Fable Collection at Creighton University. Today's episode focuses on a categorical approach to great pieces in the collection. According to the Carlson Fable Collection website at www.creighton.edu/ESOP, the collection includes over 10,000 books and likely another 10,000 fable-related objects, which vary from the smallest stamps and buttons to a large tapestry, and from purely decorative craft items to functional knife rests and everything in between.
Brian, it's good to be with you today. What I have in mind to talk about is moments when I'm just delighted to be collecting fables. Moments where it hits, when I say, aha, thank you for this. And as I did some reflecting on it, I came up with some categories, and I'll walk through those. Rare and reasonable, surprising, parodies, and recent and creative. I'll say a word about each as I get into some examples from them. First, rare and reasonable. It's a wonderful thing when I have some sense of the extraordinary value, whether it's, you know, because it's a rare book or because it's beautiful art or because it is important in the fable tradition. When I come across one of those books and it is far less expensive than I would have expected. I will mention four times that that has happened for me. Two of them were in the same book fair, and book fairs are really a picnic for me. I mean, otherwise, I'm wandering from one used bookshop to another, using Google in Madrid to lead me from one spot to another, and of course, then finding out that the place is closed on Thursday afternoons or something like that. Whereas a book fair is all of these people assembled, and I go from one to the next. And most of them will say, no fables. Or some of them will try several things that are really not fables, but they're good salesmen and they want me to see what they've got. But along the way, if at a book fair now, something like two or three books jump off the shelf, that's a big success. Of course, earlier in collecting, there were more of those big successes because there were more things to be had. And now, an unfortunate result is when I go through a book fair, that somebody will say, oh, I've got a great rare volume for you, and it's only $800. And I'll look at it and check my phone and say, yeah, it's a great book, and we have a pretty good copy for $200. To which they might say, congratulations, and that's probably the end of our conversation. I did not make them happy. There was a book fair in Silver Spring, Maryland, in September of 1991. That was a really important year for me. I was invited to hold the Jesuit chair at Georgetown University. A Jesuit chair invites one Jesuit faculty member from another school to come for a year to offer two courses each semester instead of what might be the more usual three, depending on the department or the college, and then to offer a major lecture, which the university supports to a surprising degree. It's really an important event for them. So through a variety of circumstances, I came to be the holder of the Jesuit chair for 1991-92 at Georgetown. Early in my stay there, I found out about this book fair and in Silver Spring, not far away on the metro. And there, on a Saturday, I found two things. One of them was a recently rebound, beautiful copy of Gustave Doré's Fables of La Fontaine from 1868. Blue Mountain Books, somewhere in Upper New England, had beautifully rebound this book from, as I say, 1868, and they were offering it for what became, in our negotiations, $150. So this is a first edition. It's in terrific shape. The binders, and these people did it themselves out of a love for a book that had probably lost its spine but was otherwise intact. They were happy to see it come to a library and particularly a collection that would use it. And as I say, that helped in the negotiations. But that was a find. It was also one of the heavier books I've ever bought, and so it went into my backpack and weighed me down for the rest of the show. But I didn't mind that at all. Also that day, there was a find that I think I have mentioned before. By that time, in 1991, I would have read several histories of fable, and particularly fable illustration. One of them that is regularly produced there, mentioned, and usually illustrated, was done by a French entrepreneur, Pierre Barbuteau, in the 1890s. As I think I've mentioned, I gather this is a time when Japan became open to European and American commerce. Barbuteau brought the French fables of La Fontaine and arranged with a group of Japanese traditional artists to do an edition of the fables with wonderful illustrations in some of the editions on rice paper. When I got to a booth and saw the two volumes of Barbuteau's La Fontaine, it probably stirred my innards. It was the woman in the married couple that ran Bartleby's books. And I was saying to her, you can't sell this to anybody else today. I have to see if I can get the money together. She said, well, my husband's not here, and he knows more about that, but he'll be back after lunch. And I said, oh, good, save it till after lunch, and I'll be back. And I probably tortured them with my attempts to negotiate. And for me, at that point, a two-volume work costing $640 was a deep plunge, but well worth it. And there were some resources in my holding the Jesuit chair that would not have been at my disposal otherwise. I think there was a problem, and so I needed to bring them cash. And so we agreed that I would come back on Monday to their home somewhere in the D.C. area with the $640 in cash in my sweaty little palm to get these two volumes from them. It was a wonderful experience of finding something rare and reasonable. The Doré edition I mentioned gathered together what was done in 58 subscriptions to people in France in 1868. I think it was probably every 2 weeks a new 16-page, large-size pages subscription would come out. And though I really valued this bound edition, I had wondered for a long time, how about those original subscriptions? And now and then, I would be able to get two of them or five of them. You know, as a collector, I will go after what I can get when I can get it. I got onto a Spanish exchange, Todo Colección Mensajero, and found someone from Valencia, Spain, a dealer named Libros Fugitivos, fugitive books, books that have run away from their original owners. And for under $100, there was the total collection of the 58 fascicles of the original edition of La Fontaine. Well, you can imagine I went after that immediately. It was, again, something that was rare and, I think, wonderfully reasonable. So a real hit and a real find. One more in that category of the rare and the reasonable. And this happened in 2024 in Paris, in a trip that was not particularly productive in terms of finding more hits like this. Near the Sorbonne, I actually was sitting down and resting a little bit in what had been a very busy day, and noticed the bookshop Librairie d'Amérique et d'Orient. So the bookstore of America and the East. It was very unlikely that I would find a book in a place like this, but it had usually been closed. I often get into that territory on weekends, shopping at the bookshops along the Seine. But this time it was apparently a weekday, and I saw a light on, and so I went in and asked, half thinking that they would start laughing and saying, you know, you're in the wrong place. And that's what they did say at first. But then a light went on in the woman who was serving me as a customer. She went around and reached under a table and brought out, of all things, a lovely edition in Persian of the 1722 English edition by Reverend Croxall. His narrations of the fables are excellent, but each of them has what he calls an application, which is a moral spun out to the length of a sermon. And in the length of the sermon, it will often come around to contradict what the fable might have suggested to any reasonable child. But it's a very important edition in the British tradition. I recently saw an 8th edition of Croxall. It went through various illustrators. Of course, it was offered later very cheaply. But the tradition kind of fixed on this 1722 version and stayed with it for a long time as what people could buy popularly. I never would have thought of rendering Croxall's English into Persian, and that's what they had. Who knows how many copies of a book like that have ever been printed or have ever been opened. I am just guessing that it was somebody involved in negotiation between Brits and locals who thought, this would be fun. Let me try taking Croxall's fable book and rendering it into Persian. Of course, the squiggles are things I could never make out, and I'm not sure Google Translate is willing to jump in on those Persian texts. But what a find. It made my day walking around Paris in July of 24.
The Croxall book in Persian, has anybody that you've known taken a look at that to see if the Persian translation pretty much just kept the sermon, the same sermon, or was it more enculturated into the Persian culture?
The next time I meet somebody who can read Persian, that the poor person is going to be saddled with that question from me. Come sit and let's look at this book together.
So how about it, listeners? Anyone want to take this on? If so, please send a quick email to archives@creighton.edu.
That's rare and reasonable. Then there's the surprising. And these are as varied as I could make them. When I walk the bouquinists, 4 out of 5 along the Seine in Paris don't have anything to offer. It's still fun looking, and every now and then I can find something despite what they say, though they know their material very well. But I stepped back, and on the lower level was a poster advertising Meunier chocolates. Now, Meunier produced a whole album full of stamps of La Fontaine's fables. And this poster advertising Meunier chocolates for kids illustrated the fables. I don't know how a book dealer along the Seine ever got hold of something made for candy stores. It's of a producer, Meunier, that I have known and enjoyed. Their albums, 2 different albums, were a fascinating thing. I think they were basically post-World War II productions, and each chocolate bar had 1 stamp. There were probably between 50 and 100 stamps to fill out your booklet, and they would give you the booklet so that you'd keep buying the chocolates and hoping to get enough stamps to fill it out. Well, that was a find, and I'm sure the bookinist thought, here's an idiotic American who has no idea what he's looking for. Sure, we'll give him that poster for 10 euros. Just this past week, I cataloged a postcard by Benjamin Rabier advertising Dentol, which is apparently something that's good for your teeth. Now, Rabier is a major figure in the tradition of fable advertising. People listening to podcasts like this will have heard me say that we have knife rests that illustrate the figures of Benjamin Rabier that he did somewhere near the turn of the century from 19th to 20th, a remarkable set of books doing a cartoonist's presentation of La Fontaine's fables with lovely exaggerations typical of Benjamin Rabier. And if you have seen the cow on the Laughing Cow cheese, you know Benjamin Rabier and you know his style. Well, a couple years ago, I was surprised to get hold of a whole set of advertisements from Illustration Magazine, large format magazine, early in the 20th century. Each of these advertisements is for some different medical product from a firm, including the firm that makes Dentol. And the fables are twisted just a little bit so that they advertise whatever medicament this company is making. Now, what I found is a regular postcard, same format and size that we're used to in postcards, and it has the fox and the grapes as Rabier presents it in the Dentol ad, in which everybody in the courtyard is running away because they're scared of the fox. Chickens, rabbits, okay. The fox is looking up at the bottom of the window of the house, looking up, and there are a number of cans and packages. So it's labeled the fox and the grapes. And then there is, of course, a saying at the bottom, what this fox is saying. This fox, typical for the fox and the grapes, is saying, jump for those things? No, I would never do that. But they are Dentol, so they are very good. Rabier has twisted the fable beautifully. He's got an advertisement. The surprise is, and this advertisement shows up also on a postcard, the collector in me says, oh, so is there a whole series of Rabier postcards for Dentol and the other medicaments made by this firm? I'll be on the lookout. I've mentioned mousselets before. These are surprising. They're the caps that go on top of a cork of a champagne bottle. So the surprise there is not only that these things exist as a particular production in France, but that not only one but three different sets illustrate La Fontaine's fables. When the French don't know what else to do with something and want to make it a source of an illustration, they go to the fables. Another surprise was in Vienna. I had looked up, probably on ZVAB, Zentrale Verzeichnis Antiquarischer Bücher, the central list of antiquarian books, and found a book not in our collection in a bookshop in Vienna. And so typically what I have often done is show up at a place and then go on the web, go to Yelp, go whatever I can find to locate their used bookshops. If I have 2 or 3 days, I use Google and lay out how do we get to these bookshops. Sometimes I will call beforehand. But this was a surprise that this bookshop had a very unusual rendition of fables translated back in 1566 into Hungarian. And it's a 20th century book with outstanding illustrations matched with these 16th century Hungarian translations. So it took some doing, but I found the bookshop in a regular old neighborhood in Vienna. The title of the bookshop is Erlesenes, which means excellent or select. Their mascot is the fox and the grapes. Yeah. These are the outstanding grapes that the fox was trying to get. So there is an image of the fox and the grapes on their front door. Their company card, their visit card, has fox and grapes on it. So it was a wonderful thing to find a regular old bookshop that is entirely given to celebrating the quality of the grapes in one of Aesop's fables. Surprising things. My next category is parodies. I love watching people take the original texts of the fables and have fun with them. You can do that all sorts of different ways. Sometimes the fun is heavily critical or satirical, but it's taking the story and seeing its possibilities. When we show books off in the rare books room, one of them I include is not a rare book. Almost all of the rest are. This book was done in 1933 by a fellow named Hugo Gellert, and it is highly critical of a number of figures and institutions in the United States in 1933. What Gellert does is to offer the simple text of a normal Aesopic fable. His title is Aesop Said So. It's Aesop, but the illustration applies it to something in our day. For example, he tells the story of the eagle wounded with an arrow, and as he lay dying, he realized that it was an eagle feather that had done him in. It's his own that somehow had contributed to his death. Gellert's picture is of a factory worker being subdued by a soldier with a long knife on the edge of his rifle. The worker made the weapon with which the worker is now subdued.
Yes.
Wonderful sort of critique. I would never have thought of that application in reading the fable. A lot of that that sort of thing comes also from Thurber in World War II, who does Aesopic fables in Thurber's Carnival and more fables. He has a wit for taking Aesop and rendering things like Aesop. And Thurber is fascinating because what he is really doing is telling you, don't let fables do your thinking for you. The world does not work the way fables say they do. So he'll tell the tortoise and the hare and do the usual sort of build up to the beginning of the race and then have the race. And he'll say something like, you know, the rabbit finished in 3 minutes and the turtle took 4 hours and 45 minutes. That's the way it works in the world. You know? Slow and steady does not win the race. The Town Mouse and the Country Mouse is just a fascinating fable of an attempt to make a Sunday social visit that goes completely wrong. The travel schedules were off, the train missed its appointment, he got on the wrong train, and the moral is something like, you're doing just fine, why do you have to go visit your cousin? He takes the story of the fox and the crow and tells it in normal fashion first, but then has something like 5 or 6 additions and reverses, where the crow and the fox are outfoxing each other, and the crow is getting the fox to give back the cheese because he sees a farmer coming, and at one point there's an allegation that the cheese is poisoned. It's a wonderful creativity, having fun with the fable. But the upshot of it all is really, in my opinion, that Thurber is telling you, please, think for yourself and don't let your fables do thinking for you. I brought along an edition I just cataloged yesterday. This is a Canadian French school book or reading book for kids 3 to 5. And it's called Fables Réinventées, Fables Reinvented. It tells the fable in very much the usual fashion, going through with very lively cartoons for kids, but it's offering a lot of different explanations for what goes on in the fable. It starts with the turtle trying to get into a wood carving competition, and somehow he applied to the wrong thing and got into a contest. And what do the hare and the tortoise do for fun during the day? The hare jumps up and down on a trampoline. The tortoise does picture puzzles. What do they do for breakfast? The hare can't wait for the toast to pop out of his toaster. The tortoise complains because his cereal gets soggy as he's eating it slowly. So it's all sorts of fun. Of course, what I found out, I mean, I noticed that this looks like a series. I went after the series. So far, I think there are three published in the series in 2018 and 19. One of them was immediately available on Amazon, and I got it. And I'm in a hunt for the third one in this series. Lovely parody developing off of the original fable.
Looking at it, it's an interesting cartoon kind of style, too, like a spherical round head.
Yep. Distinctive style by Dominique Pelletier, and I think probably very good for kids 3 to 5. One more like that. It was done by Nicholas Millet in 2012. It's French, The Fox and the Crow, 99 versions reinvented. At the end of my comment, I say this, let me offer a sample of the 5 approaches he takes to this one story of The Fox and the Crow. An acrostic, so that the opening letters of each verse spell M. Jean La Fontaine. Number 2, a prose version after the manner of Balzac. Number 3, a scientific version needing more than a full page. Number 4, a tourist guide version, and number 5, a rhyming version in English. People having fun with fables are part of the reason I got into this. As you know, diversity is the key theme of this collection. That touches on 2 more, recent and creative. Every year probably sees between 5 and 10 fable books published in English and maybe 10 to 20 published in French. Many of them I will get because they belong in the collection, and I'll look through and say, why did someone do this? There is nothing new for me or creative or insightful. Two exceptions to that rule are an edition done by Barbara McClintock back in 1991. I love to use a slide of hers from the story of The Fox and the Grapes, where after the telling of the Aesopic fable, she has the fox buying fruit from the mouse fruit seller on the street. Other pictures show a crow frustrated over his loss. The fox is winking over the soup that he's offering to humiliate the stork. The wolf is pointing a finger down at the lamb. It's creative, engaging, and fun. The last one I'll mention is Robert Coover. This really made my heart go pity-pat when I first found it in 2000. He published in 1986 a booklet titled Aesop's Forest. He walks through a novelette-like action, mingling fables left and right with a great deal of insight as to what's up in the fables. So I wrote in my critique, or in my catalog of it, 33 of the most biting pages I know about fables. The book makes a good antidote for the presumption that fables are saccharinely cute and for children. So characters are using the fables for real-life action of deceiving each other, of saving their lives, of dominating each other. Coover must touch, I wrote, on 100 fables in this novella-length booklet. My hat is off to him for a great work. It's great to see somebody take the fables so seriously that he can re-engage them in a new work that shows a very good insight to what was going on in the depth of the original stories. So those are some of the hits of my collecting experience.
That's fascinating. I really like how you've categorized these. It's almost like if somebody wanted to rate them, well, this would be really good on the surprise scale. Not so much on the parody scale. It's pretty straightforward.
Well, that's all the time we have for today, Father Carlson. I'd like to thank you for this quick survey of some of the major pieces in these dynamic categories of books and objects in the Carlson Fable Collection.
We hope to be back in the studio to share more discussions in future episodes of The Glories of Stories. So long, everyone. The views and opinions expressed in this podcast episode are not those of Great University and its departments and divisions, but are the opinions of our hosts and guests alone. Copyright 2025 by Creighton University, all rights reserved.